All right, good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. This is the third shiur in our series on the history of the Talmud. Last time we spoke about the rise of Hillel, about how it is that he came to be the leader of a movement that I would not be lying if I said to we continue to follow to this day. So how did Hillel come about? How did he become the head of the Sanhedrin? And ultimately what followed? We saw a little bit, I guess in the last two shiurim, that Hillel was not universally accepted. It seemed to be that there was a large group of people, potentially even a majority of people, who were very unhappy with the way he led things. Particularly Beit Shammai, right, the house of Shammai. One of the interesting things is when they started holding only like Beit Hillel, and Shammai was put to the side as the rejected opinion. That doesn't happen until after the Second Temple period, during the time of Gamliel II. So because of that, the war, the fight remains between them. And so what I want to know here is we're going to deal with two basic questions. Question number one is, what were the motivating factors, or potentially the motivating historical factors, that created these two perspectives? That's number one. And obviously you have to be careful when you make that type of claim, because you want to say, Hillel would have made his decisions in a vacuum. Right, were he standing, him and Moshe Rabbeinu on Mount Sinai, we would like to think that Hillel would have just made his decision because that's what he believed to be the correct decision. On the other hand, there must be historical factors that potentially enter into any type of discussion or any type of conclusions that he might have come to. The second question is, practically, what were the relationship between the two houses? Did they hate each other? Was it the Hatfields and McCoys? I was thinking the Jets and the
Sharks.
The Sharks and the Jets, is that from West Side Story, right? So what was going on? So we'll start with the founders of the two movements, Hillel and Shammai. What did you say? Lubavitch and Satmar. I don't know. I don't want to be doing things that are too practical and realistic. I don't want to be besmirching the good names of any good Hasidic movements or Misnagdic movements.
Shiites.
What?
Shiites.
Again, like I said, I don't want to be too specific. It's easier to use fictional characters like the Hatfields and the McCoys. The Capulets and the Montagues, however you want to do it. So we'll start off with the Gemara and Sota. The Gemara there is discussing models for who one should be like, and here it talks about the various models of brothers. And it says, "My voz yavozu li." Voz yavozu means to collect the spoils, or it would be like spoils to me. So Amar Ula, thus says Ula, lo kishimon achi Azaria, not like Shimon and Azaria. Lo kirabi Yochanan devei Nasiya, and not like Rabbi Yochanan of the house of the Nasi. Ella kihilel v'shevna. Rather, we should aspire to be like Hillel and Shevna. Okay, so Hillel, we know who he is. Who's the Shevna? So we met in past times Menachem, right? We said that was Hillel's original partner, and Menachem, for whatever reasons, went off the derech. We discussed a little bit, was he forced out by Rome? Was he seduced by Rome? Was it somewhere in the middle? It's hard to say, but the point is Menachem ended up not in the camp of the halachists, but in the camp of the Romans. But who was this Shevna? We never heard of him. So, Dechiyata Rav Dimi Amar, when Rav Dimi came, he said, Hillel v'Shevna achi havo. Hillel and Shevna were brothers, right? You didn't know about Hillel's brother, Shevna. right? What was the nature of their relationship? Hillel asak b'Torah. Hillel would sit and study Torah. Shevna avad iska. Shevna had a business. What would Shevna do? Shevna would support Hillel in his business. Lesof, in the end of the day, Amarle, and in the end he says to him, Tana ro v'liflog. He says, how about we do 50-50, right? You learn half the day, work half the day. I'll do the exact mirror image. Batkal, yatta batkal, out came a voice from the heaven and said, Yitain ish et kol hom beito. A person should give all of the spoils of his house, meaning, Shevna, you're doing the right thing. Get back to work. Hillel is chosen. Why do I think this interesting? Because it's another story that seems to indicate that Hillel has kind of this, you know, chosen one type of aura surrounding him. He's chosen. You know, the voice comes out from the heavens that tells Shevna, you're doing the right thing by supporting Hillel, by investing in him. There is a sense of something grander and great that's going on in the life of Hillel. Not only that, but also his yichus. The Talmud Yerushalmi, Perek Dalet Halacha Gimel, so also has a book, they found a book of yichus, right? A family tree of Hillel. And where does he come from? Amar Ravi Levi Megillas Yochsin Matzu Birushalayim. They found a scroll of a family tree in Jerusalem. The Kasuv Ba Hillel Min De David. Right, what does it say? That Hillel is direct descendant of King David of David HaMelech. Ben Yatzaf, Ben De Asaf, Ben De Tzitzis HaKesef, Min De Avner, Ben Kuvsin, Min De Achav, Ben Kalba Savuva, Min De Kelev, Min De Rabbi Yanai, Min De Ali, Min De Yun, Min De Tzpor, Rabbi Chia, Rabbi Ab, Ben Shavta, Ben Avital, Rabbi Yossi, Ben Rabbi Chalav, Min De Yodamna, etc., etc. Okay? What's the whole point? Again, you see here that there is a sense that Hillel is this chosen one. He is, you know, in many senses, has a messianic quality. It's kind of rough in that time of in that generation to have a messianic quality, since there were probably lots of people who were claiming to have messianic qualities. But we see here, I mean, Hillel is, you know, taking his perspective on Torah to the people, etc. And like any kind of figure who is very, very influential, of course, a set of lores and stories go up about them. And the Gemara in Shabbat, Daf Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, quotes a number of stories, some of them more famous than others, about Hillel, and about his legendary personality and his qualities. And again, I want to focus on these because I want to see, is there some sort of, you know, kind of, again, we could read it one way and, you know, you can learn the Musar and the Hashkafa from it, but I want to learn today, I want to learn the history. Like, meaning, what are we learning historically about the time, about the perspectives of Hillel and potentially Shammai as well, that might be interesting in terms of understanding the time and the society. So the first one, it tells the story of two guys who make a bet. Ma'ase b'shnei adam shehimru zeh. The Gemara in Shavas Lamed Aleph tells us, two guys, they make a bet. Amru, they say, kol mi sheyelech v'yakni des Hillel yitol arba meos zuz. Anyone who can get Hillel to lose his temper, right? 400 zuz. That's it, okay? Put it down on the table. Who's going to do it? So Amar echad mehem, one of the guys says, ani akni tenu. Says, I can do it, I could get Hillel's goat. So what does he do? When are you going to get someone, you know, when they're most anxious to get angry? Erev Shabbos, right? You know, he's probably all busy, you know, they're going to be expecting a big drasha in the Beis HaMikdash from the Nasi. You know, his wife's probably telling him he's got to put up the chulin before Shabbos. You know, there's all the cooking and the cleaning and everything that needs to be done. Right? So ayom Erev Shabbos, I was on Erev Shabbos. V'Hillel chafaf es rosho, Hillel was, you know, fixing his hair, whatever it was. Halach v'avar Pesach beiso. So this guy, you know, who's going to win the 400 zuz, says, Amar, mikan Hillel. He says, Hillel, are you there? Hillel, are you there? You know, you knock on the rabbi's door, Erev Shabbos, it must be an emergency. He comes out. So what does he do? He gets dressed, nis'atef, he puts on his talis. V'yata l'krosso, he goes out to greet the man. Amar lo, b'ni, ma'ata mevakesh. He says, my son, what do you need? Amar lo, he says to him, she'la yesh li l'shol. He says, I have a kasha, a shayla. Oh, fine, a shayla, what is it, you know? So amar lo, shal b'ni shal, ask your question. So he says, mipnei ma roshein shal bavlin silgal galot. So he says, why are the heads of Babylonians rounder than the heads of other peoples? No, so Hillel sits there. Amar lo, Hillel says, b'ni she'ela gdola she'alta. Oh, what a kasha. Taka, this is a good kasha. What does he say? Mipnei she'en lahem chayos pekuchos. Yeah, pikchos, sorry. What does he say? He says, because they don't have bright midwives. Their midwives aren't as skilled as other midwives, so their heads come out misshapen. Fine. Halach ve'imtin shah achas. He waits another hour. Right? V'chazar v'amar mikan Hillel mikan. Hillel knocks on the door again. Is Hillel there? Is Hillel there? Hillel nis'ate fiyatza l'krasso. Hillel goes out and greets it. Amar lo b'ni ma'ata mevakesh. Says, what's your question? What's your shayla? Amar lo she'la yesh lishol. Says, I have a question to ask you. Amar lo sha'al b'ni sha'al. By the way, just in case you were interested in knowing, does the Talmud have a literary quality? The answer is 100%. The whole point of this Talmudic statement here, or the whole point of this test here, is to see how much procrastination and ridiculous questions can get on Hillel's nerves. And each time it goes through each, you know, aspect of the conversation, showing how much it would grate on the nerves of a normal person. Right? So he says, Sha'al b'ni Sha'al. So he says, "Mipnei ma einein shal Tarmudian trutos." So he says, "Why are the eyes of these Tarmudians? Why are they bleary-eyed? You know, they have this kind of blurry eyes to them." Amar lo, Hillel says to him, "Bini she'la gedola sha'alta." Oh, you're asking a great, stupendous, wonderful question. "Mipnei shedarim bein acholos." They live in sandy areas. Lots of sandstorms gets in their eyes, makes them have blurry eyes. Thank you. What does he do? Halach v'himtin sha'achas. He waits another hour. Chazar v'amar comes back to the door. Who knows? You know, it may be even in the 18 minutes already. The house is going crazy. He's got to get to shul. Right? Knocks on the door. Mikan Hillel, Mikan Hillel. Hillel, are you there? What does Hillel do? Nis'atev wraps himself in his talis. The Yatza Likraso. Amar lo b'ni ma'ata mevakesh. She says, what are you asking? Amar lo she'la yesh li shul. I have a question. Amar lo sha'al b'ni sha'al. Go ahead and ask your question. So he says, mipnei ma ragleim shel afrikayim rechavos. He says, why do Africans have wide feet? So he says, amar lo b'ni she'la gdola sha'alta. He says, my son, you're asking a great question. Why? Because they live in rocky, watery areas, so their feet are adapted to the areas. Amar lo, she'lot harbe yesh li shlishol. So he says to Hillel, he says, listen, I've got a lot of questions. This isn't, you know, I'm just getting started here. So, umitziarei ani shema tichos, I'm afraid you're going to get angry. So what does Hillel do? So you would think, oh, a lot of questions. You know, looks at his watch. It's 5 minutes to Shabbos. Who knows? What does he do? Nis'ate, if he wraps himself, you know, throws his talis around over his shoulder. V'yashav lefanov. Sat down in front of him and he says, Amar lo, kol she'yos she'yesh l'cha l'sh'ol sha'al. Says, my son, any questions you got to ask, geig isn't to hate. Go ask your questions. Amar lo, so he says, I forget, I got one question. Atahu Hillel Shekorin Osra Nasi Yisrael. Are you the one and the only Hillel that they call the leader of Israel? Amar lo Hain. Says, yes, I am. He says, Amar lo, imatahu lo yarbu kamoscha b'Yisrael. He says, if you're really the one and only Hillel, I hope there aren't many like you in Israel. Amar lo mifneima, b'ni b'mifneima. He says, why not? He says, if you think I'm a good person, wouldn't you want everyone to be dying? He says, Amar lo, mipnei she'ivati al yadchar ba'me'asuz. He says, because you just lost me 400 tzuzim. That's why. Okay? So Amar lo, Hillel responds to him, Hevi zehir beruchacha. Hillel says to him, you know what? You gotta be careful. You got to take care of your spirits. Kedai hu hillel shetabed al yado arba meos zuz ve'arba meos zuz ve'hillel lo yakbid. He says, listen. He says, I'm worth losing 400 zuzin for if you learn the lesson of being able to control your temper. And he says, and even were I to lose 400 zuzim, he says, it wouldn't bother me. I'd be able to get over it. That's what Hillel says. So that's story number one. Great, great story. Story number two, you probably heard before. Tanu Rabbanan. So again, Shabbos, Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph. Our rabbis taught, Maisa ben Achri Echad Sheba Lifnei Shammai. A certain non-Jew came before Shammai. Amar lo, so he says to Shammai, Kama toros yesh lachem? How many Torahs do you have? Amar lo, so he says, Shtayim, we have two. A Torah shebichsav, we have a written Torah. The Torah shebal peh, we have an oral Torah. Amar lo, so this guy says to him, shebichsav, the written one, ani mamincha, I believe you. I trust that there's really a written law. V'shabal peh, but this oral law, eini mamincha, I don't believe you. Gairemi, so he says, convert me al menas shetilamdeni Torah shebichsav on the condition that you teach me only the written Torah. Ga'arbo v'hotzio ben azifa, Shammai, you know, screamed at him and kicked him out of his house. Ba'alifnei Hillel, he comes before Hillel. Gaire, right? And Hillel converts him. Okay, so now he's going to come back. He wants to learn the Torah Shebichsav, the written law. Yom Akama Amarle, the first day he comes to him, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. He teaches him the Aleph Beis. Lamachar Apikle, the next day he teaches him Dalet, Gimel, Beis, Aleph. Amarle, V'hayis Mola Amartali Hachi. He says, but yesterday you told me the other way around. Right, why are you doing it backwards today? Amar lo, laval didika samachta, dal peh, nami samachlai. He says, listen, you trusted me, what I said to you, the Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, etc. You trusted me that I was right yesterday, and you're not questioning me. So trust me now when I tell you that there's also an oral law. That's what he says to him. Okay? Shuv ma'aseh ben achri echad. Again, a case of a non-Jew. Shabbat lifnei Shammai, this is the famous one. Amar lo, he says to him, Gaireni amenasha tilamdeni kola Torah kula. Convert me on the condition that you will teach me the entirety of the Torah. Kshani omed al regal achas, while I'm standing on just one foot. So what does Shammai do? So apparently, a lot of people concluded that Shammai must have been some sort of builder, but he takes the building measurer in his hand, and he pushes him, dachafo ba'amas habinyan shebiyado, he kicks him out of his house. Ba'alifnei Hillel, he comes before Hillel. Gairei Hillel converts him. Amar lo, he says to him, dalach sani lechaver chalo tavid. What you hate, don't do to your friend. Zoi kol ha-Torah kula, that is the entirety of the Torah. V'idach, the rest of it is perusha, is merely commentary. Zil gmor, now go learn. Okay, so what do we learn from these stories about Hillel? So the first few stories we learn, again, that there's this kind of aura, this lore, this, you know, legendary quality to Hillel the person. But what do we learn from these stories? And let's kind of put it in the context of the time. The context of the time is, again, you have, for the first time, this opening of doors, this attraction of the Jewish people to a culture other than their own, and not like Greek culture, where it was kind of, it wasn't as, I don't think the draw was as powerful as Roman culture was. It was an egalitarian, open-minded culture that was trying to bring in as many people, and there was something exciting about it. And we see that Menachem is going. You also have the breakdown of the traditional institutions that we've seen. Right, originally you had this powerful Sanhedrin that was this, you know, tour de force in terms of its ability to control and manipulate and define the boundaries of halacha. But all of a sudden, you have the doors opening to the world, and it's going to create questions. And there are, I believe, two perspectives on how you deal with it, and I think perhaps I'm imposing my contemporary, you know, kind of perspectives, but I'm not convinced that I am. There are two perspectives on it. You could see the attraction of the outside world And you can say, you know what? We need to double down on what's worked until now. Right? And that's Shammai's perspective. Until now, we have had an elitist, very definitive, traditional interpretation of Torah Shebaal Peh. It was given over to a unique and singular group of people who were in charge of interpreting that. And we, as their kind of inheritors, have the responsibility to preserve that tradition and that perspective as we continue. Again, kind of narrowing, focusing, very, very particular. So when someone comes to Shammai and says, you know, Kamatoros, you know what, you're not worthy into this camp, get out of here. You know, when someone comes and says, you know, teach me the entire Torah while I'm standing on one foot, again, that type of tolerance is just not something that Shammai is interested or ready for. Hillel, on the other hand, what is his quality? And it's, I don't think it's by chance that the Gemara gives the story first of how tolerant and how slow to anger Hillel was. Hillel understood that the times they were a-changing, right? To quote Bob Dylan, right? And you know, the old road is rapidly aging. You know, get out of the new one if you won't lend your hand. And he understood that that's what was going on, and therefore he understood that there was a new perspective that had to be brought. That if you were going to educate the people, whether it was in the, again, the broad-based people knew the halachos, they didn't necessarily know the intricacies as to how halacha was decided and how those conclusions were come to. That wasn't the way the broad-based people knew things. So therefore, what does Hillel have to do? Hillel says, I got to be open-minded, I got to be patient, I got to be understanding that they're going to come along slowly, that they're going to understand slowly. I've got to engage them and to teach them in such a way. And I think it's really captured by Avos de Rabbi Nassan. Avos de Rabbi Nassan is kind of this expanded version of Pirkei Avos. And Avos de Rabbi Nassan, it says, Beishamai Omrim, Beishamai says, Al Yishana Adam El Mishu Chacham Ve'anav Uven Avos Ve'ashir. Beishamai says, who do we teach? We teach to someone who is wise, and who is modest, and who has Yichus Ben Avos, and who is Ashir, and he's wealthy. Basically, he just described these are the people who are allowed on the Sanhedrin. Who are you allowed to teach? You should be teaching the same elitist people, the same elite group of people who have been deciding halacha until now. Problem is those same elite group of people are not as strong or as powerful as they once were. They don't have the same type of force that they once had. So what does Beit Hillel say? Beit Hillel omrim l'chol adam yishaneh. Beit Hillel says we got to teach everybody. If we teach everybody, let's see what happens. Sharbei poshim ayu b'yam b'Yisrael. There are many sinners amongst Israel. V'nikt karvu l'talmud Torah v'yatzvu mehem tzadikim v'chasidim v'ksherim. Right? Because they were taught Torah, what happened? So fine, this generation, they're still going to be a little bit ignorant. This generation, they may not be the biggest Talmidei Chacham. What's going to happen? They're going to have some sort of halachic sense, halachic integrity within their home. And that's going to bring to the next generation. The next generation, you're going to have the tzadikim, chasidim, and ksherim. Hillel understood that there had to be a democratization of the Torah. And Shammai was saying that I don't think that that's going to work. So again, it's two perspectives on what I would call the influence of modernity. It could be teach everybody and see what happens, or it could be, you know, double down on the traditionalism that has been going on until now. And of course, as would happen with two kind of really forceful personalities they're going to attract their houses. You know, there's leadership here. I think, listen, it's not by chance that Menachem, the last thing we heard of Menachem before he went off the derech was that he agreed with Hillel. Because Hillel was someone who could engage and speak to someone like Menachem. Right, someone like Menachem, who was attracted by the, you know, Roman perspective, Hillel was someone who was engaging him and speaking to him, and he could to a certain extent agree with Hillel. Shammai comes in, and again, he's bringing in the more traditionalist approach, the approach that's more, you know, this is the conclusion because this is what we've been doing until now, and realize Hillel is going to create a revolution. Because once Hillel democratizes the Torah, once he allows everyone to be learning it and gives over the tools that have been used by the Sanhedrin to everybody, You have the potential for some massive, massive debates. That's A, because people are going to say, well, now I can view it on my own and I can understand it on my own. You have the place now for massive, massive debates. And you also have the opportunity for a new type of conversation and a new modality of deciding halacha that had never existed before. And you're going to see the generation that is the inheritors of Hillel, the Ben Zakkais, the Rabbi Akivas, the Rabbi Gamliels, the Rabbi Yoshuas. Those people are going to be keenly aware of the revolution of Torah study that is going on. And when we get up to them, we're going to see them. Who is the one who inspired that revolution? Who allowed for that revolution to kind of burst out onto the scene? It all starts with Hillel and his decision that things have to be changed and remodified in terms of the way things are taught. That's kind of, I think, you know, part number one of this whole discussion. Yeah, Avi. So, were you here last week?
Yeah.
So, it seems like his initial popularity, and he was chosen before Shammai rose to power, right? Also, so he had the knowledge. He was well trained under Shmaya v'Avtalion. He had a lot of the qualities that they were looking for. Well, there were these B'nai B'Teira that the Gemara that we saw last week, who seemed to be this kind of old halachic nobility family that was, you know, taking charge of things, but it was clear that the B'nai B'Teira were in over their heads. And when Hillel was able to kind of decide things and was decisive and was able to give very cogent explanations for it, so he seems to have been chosen to be the leader because of that. How were the houses of Shammai and the houses of Hillel emerged very, very quickly. So what was their relationship? So it seems like there are two perspectives that you find within rabbinic literature. Not necessarily mutually exclusive, and I think, again, if we look at them historically, they're very interesting. One perspective was that it was the Hatfields and the McCoys. The other is that it was some sort of, war. It was some sort of, respectful debate. I think I was trying to think about how to view it. My sense is that there was some sort of, like, chivalric code that went on between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. You know what I mean? And that's the perspective I'm going to try to give in terms of if we wanted to give, like, a quality that was going on between them. We'll start with the Mishnah Maseches Avos, Perek Hey, Mishnah Yedayin. Yeah, Lou, sorry.
Before you go there, what you're saying is very interesting, but you can look at it, if you're taking that perspective of sort of that prism, you can look at it a little bit differently and say that Hillel was, what Shammai was saying, we have to close the barriers and prevent assimilation. And we have to, just double down on who we are and stay away. And Hillel, they could have looked at it and said, you're the pathway out. You're the assimilationist. You're making it easy for accommodation to be made.
So I'll quote for you the words of Rav Moshe Lichtenstein. I thought it was very profound. He said, in the 1950s, Rav Soloveitchik told the world that Torah was still relevant to modern society. And in the 21st century, Rav Soloveitchik tells the world that modern society is still relevant to Torah. Okay, I thought those were very profound words.
I gotta meditate.
Okay, you can meditate on those, but I think what you're saying, I think Hillel is saying both. He's telling the modernists that Torah is still relevant to their lives because look at how it is learned; it has a philosophical import. Base that you're not realizing. It's not just a list of laws. It's a study. It's an experience. And he tells the ancientists, the traditionalists, he tells them that know that there's a place for some of the modern perspectives in terms of enhancing our Torah experience. All right, so we'll start with the just in terms of the beginning of this chivalric code. So the Mishnah Maseches Avos Parakei Mishnah Yedayin says Kol Machlokas Shehi L'Shem Shamayim Sofa L'Hiskayim, that any argument that is for the sake of heaven will last, will gain establishment. V'She'ina L'Shem Shamayim, and one that is not for the sake of heaven, Ein Sofa L'Hiskayim. So then the Gemara says, that one won't last. That one won't continue. So, Ezohi machloka shi l'shem shamayim. What is a argument for the sake of heaven? Hillel v'shamay. Hillel and Shamay are the argument for the sake of heaven. V'she'ena l'shem shamayim. And one which is not for the sake of heaven. That's Korach v'adaso. That's Korach and his people who rose up against Moshe. So here you see, there was, Chazal saw something positive, something qualitatively good about the way Hillel and Shammai were arguing, something good for the Jewish people. The irony of that is Shammai might have looked at it and said, I don't think this is good for the Jewish people for us to be arguing. Where Hillel is saying, you know, I think this is great. Let's hear other opinions. And we're going to see things like that. The Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Yudalit Amid Aleph, kind of, again, makes this kind of chivalric code even more interesting. Tashma, you know, come in here. Afa pi she elu osrim ve elu matirim, even though these were prohibited and these were okay with it. And again, we're talking here about arguments that were happening between Hillel and Shammai here over whether, in fact, two people were married. Okay? But what happens? Lo nimnu beishamai minisa nashim mi beisila velo beisila mi beishamai. It didn't become so intense of an argument that their children didn't marry each other. There was no, you know, Romeo Hillel and Juliet Shammai, right? Because what would happen if Juliet Shammai would come back and say, "I'm in love with Romeo and Hillel"? Everyone would make it happen. They'd make the marriage happen. That's what it seems like the Gemara in Yevamos is saying. So again, it seems like, you know, rather than viewing, you know, the Capulets and the Montagues as our model here, I would view it more as, you know, kind of like the Knights of the Round Table, which, you know, when they weren't, you know, defending Arthur, they were fighting with one another. But it didn't mean that they didn't share a certain common ground together. Which brings us now, meaning even though there's a chivalric code, it seems like one of the members of these arguing factions really, really wanted to win. We do not see the Hillelians or the House of Hillel ever, you know, kind of standing their ground, placing the line in the sand and saying, you know, it's either us or them. We never see them doing that. But we do see the Beit Shammai doing that as well. If you remember all the way back to the first class that I gave on the argument over smicha, right? Over whether you should place your hands upon the sacrifice on Yontif or not. And the famous story of Hillel. And what does Hillel do when he's confronted by the Shammaians in the Gemara in Beit Zadav Chaf Amid Aleph? And they say, you know, are you planning on doing smicha? So he brushes them off, and he tries to prove that it's really, you know, it's really not the korban you think it is. It's a female korban. You know, tries to get out of it. And then you have, you know, the Shammaians trying to force everyone to follow their halacha. And again, they're not being new and unique. Right? They're not being like, all of a sudden we have to impose halacha on everyone. What do you mean? Until this generation, that's the way we did it. When the Sanhedrin made a decision, you know, that's what it was. So our rabbi, you know, Shammai, made a decision on this issue. We hold like him. So now everyone's got to hold like him. Right? What's even more interesting is when the Yerushalmi in Chagiga, Perek Beis Halacha Gimel, requotes it, what does it say? It says when Bava ben Buta, if you remember, who was the student of Shammai, who had a little bit more, I guess, perspective on all of these issues, when he realizes that we just can't have the Beit Shammai winning like this, when he realizes that, So how does he realize it? Nichnas la'azara umatza shomemes, it says in the Yerushalmi that we saw. It says he entered into the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash and he found it in upheaval. He found wars going on over these issues and over what was going on here. And he tries to show that the people are into Hillel, and you know, maybe we need to calm down here a little bit. But it's clear that Shammai thinks that their word is law. And which brings us to a very, very interesting case, which is at one point, something very interesting happened in Aliyas Hananya ben Chizkia, in the upstairs Beis Medrash of Hananya ben Chizkia. It's interesting that this is happening not in the Lishkas HaGazis, it's not happening in the Beis Medrash, but it's happening upstairs by Hananya ben Chizkia. Okay? What's going on up there? But it seems like at least a group of Beit Shammayans have had enough, and they want to vote. Right? Because until now, that's the way halacha has been decided. At some point, the Sanhedrin needs to vote. Right? So let's get a vote down. Let's get this done. Let's make the decision. And once the decision is made, we can move on with our lives. We don't have to deal with, you know, this guy doing one set of rules and this guy following another set of rules. Right? They just didn't want that anymore. So the Mishnah Masechel Shabbos has kind of the simplest way of defining. Elu min halachos, these were from the halachos. Sha'amru ba'aliyas Hananya ben Chizkia ben Gurion, kishalu levakra. Right? They went up to Hananya ben Chizkia ben Gurion's house, and they went to visit him. And nimnu virabu Beis Shammai al Beis Hillel. They counted up, and there were more members of Beis Shammai than there were of Beis Hillel. They decreed 18 things on that day. The Mishnah and Shabbos goes on to discuss the decree of those 18 things. But the interesting language is nimnu v'gamru. What do? They counted up. Okay, so what does it seem? It seems like Shammai was the more popular one. But if you go to the same story in other places, you see that there was a lot more complexity going on here, and potentially a lot more violence than we realize is going on here. The Tosefta in Shabbos, Perek Aleph Halacha Tes Zayin, also discusses this case. And what does it say? Elu min ha'alachos sha'amru ba'aliyas Hananya ben Chizkiyahu ben Gurion shalu levakro. These are the halachos that they were said in Hananya's upstairs apartment. Nimnu, they counted, v'rabu be Shammai be'as Hillel. The Shammayans were more than the Hillelians. Right? Shmona esrei davar gozru bayom. 18 things they decided on that day. And now watch what the Tosefta adds. Oso hayom, that day, kasha lahem Yisrael, kiyom shenasa bo ha'egel. That day was as difficult, as hard for the Jewish people, as the day the egel was built, the golden calf. Wow. That's pretty intense. Before we start figuring out what the heck is going on here, let's see one more. Okay, the Gemara in Shabbos Yudzayin Amud Aleph gives even more detail. Natsu cherev beveis hamedrash. What they do? They took a sword and stabbed it right into the center of the Beis Hamedrash. Amru hanichnas yikanes vayotze al yetze. Anyone who's here is here. If you're going to come in now. Meaning, if you leave, what are we going to do? If you try to come in after this point, we're going to kill you. For those of you listening, I'm making a sword motion. Okay. Vosa yom haya hillel kafuf. What happened? Hillel, the great, stupendous, wonderful, amazing Hillel. Hillel, who the savior of the Jewish people. Hillel, this, you know, kind of messianic figure. What's he doing? He's sitting head down in front of Shammai like one of the students. Okay? Well, how difficult was it? It was as difficult as the day the Egel was made. Hillel was brought to his knees. What happened? What happened? The Yerushalmi sheds more light on it. If you go to the Yerushalmi, Perek Aleph, what does it say? Halacha Aleph, Tan Rabbi Yeshua ben Onaya, Tamidei Beis Shammai, the students of Beis Shammai, Amdu Lahem Milamata, Vehayu Horgin B'Talmidei Beis Hillel. What would they do? It was a massacre on that day. Enough is enough with the arguments already. Enough is enough with all of this. Tana Shisha Mehen Vashar Amdu Alei Mecharvo Suvarach, and they were standing there with swords and spears, six of them, and we were going to vote. This was going to be it. Enough of these argumentations. Enough of all these things that were going on. Zehu gamarnu. This is what we're doing. Right? They had enough of the two Torahs. They had enough of all these things that were going on. What happened here? Again, Shammai's perspective couldn't allow for a different interpretation. It wouldn't allow for a different interpretation. And they had enough of it already. And so what they do? They wanted to get the vote down, get everything on the books, and this way it would all be decided. Again, the chivalric code that we were talking about in Avos, about, you know, and the Gemara, where was it? The Gemara in Yevamos about how they would marry into one another. It seems very difficult considering what the Gemara in Shabbos and the Yerushalmi in Shabbos seem to describe what's going on here. So you have here kind of this massive sea change, this, you know, this antagonism, this tension that's going on here. And this tension is going to last. The Gemara in Erevin, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, adds to it, Amar Rabbi Abba Amar Shmuel, Shalosh Shanim Nechleku Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. For 3 years, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue with one another. Halalu Omrim Halacha Kmosenu, Valalu Omrim Halacha Kmosenu. Each one saying, the Halacha is like us. Yatza Baskol V'Amra, out comes a voice from the heavens and says, Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim Hein, both of them are the words of the living God. The halacha ka Beis Hillel, but we paskin like Beis Hillel. So then the Gemara says the obvious question: if both of them are right, right? Why does Hillel get the halacha like them if both of them are right? Why do we hold like them? So mipnei shenochin va'aluvin hein, right? Because they were calm and they were patient. V'hayushonin divrehem v'divrei Beis Shammai, they would always learn not only their own opinion, but also the opinion of Beis Shammai. Right? Hillel is the patient one. Hillel is the open one. Hillel wants to understand. Hillel wants this, is embracing this democratization. Not Hillel. The lo od, not only that, Ela Shemakdivin Divrei Beis Shammai LeDivreihem. Right? What would they do? They would actually explain Beis Shammai's position first before they gave their own position. Ka'osa Sheshaninu, and then it tells a story. Someone who is sitting most of his body inside of the house, but his food and everything is in the sukkah. So is a yotze. So Beis Shammai poslin uBeis Hillel machshirin. Beis Shammai says it's good, and Beis Shammai says it's no good, and Beis Hillel says it's good. So Amru Beis Hillel Beis Shammai lo kachaya maisa shalchu ziknei Beis Shammai v'ziknei Beis Hillel vakeres Rav Yochanan ben Acharanes. So don't you know that the elders of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, they went to go visit Rav Yochanan ben Acharanes umatzauhu yoshev rosho v'rupa v'sukah v'shulchan o'am v'soch habayis. They saw him sitting like that. Right? Amru lahen Beis Shammai, so Beis Shammai says, Misham Raya. Misham Raya, that's your proof? Avhein Amrulo, the Shammayin said to him at the time, I don't care, Gadol Shmadol. If you've been doing this, Imkacha Yisa Noeg, Lo Kiyamta Mitzvah Sukkah Miyamecha. If you've been doing this your whole life, you never ever fulfilled the Mitzvah of Sukkah, Rabbi. That's it. Okay? Lamdecha Shekola Bashmil Atzma HaKadosh Baruch Hu HaMakbiyo, V'chola Makbiyo Atzma HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashpilo. Right? What does it tell you? Anyone who makes himself seem small, God raises him up. Anyone who makes himself seem lowly, anyone who makes himself seem great, God knocks him down. Kol ha-machazer al-gadula, gadula borachas m'menu. Anyone who runs after greatness, greatness runs from him. V'chol ha-boreach min ha-gadula, gadula mechazeres achrav. And anyone who runs after it, it all runs after him. Skipping a few, Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Shtei Shanim u'mechta, 2.5 years, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued, Halalu Omrim, one says, Noach lo la'adam, shelo nivra, yosem mishenivra. A person is better off if he were never born. V'halalu Omrim, Noach lo la'adam, shenivra, yosem mishelo nivra. Nimnu v'gamru, they counted up and they decided, Noach lo la'adam, shelo nivra, better that a person shouldn't have been born, yosem mishenivra. Achshav shenivra, but now that he's been created, yifashu shemasav. Right, he should look at his actions. Who is the one who said this? Beis Hillel. He's the patient one. Who am I? What am I doing? And so the truth is, we're not going to paskin officially like Hillel again until the times of Rabbi Akiva, post Rabban Gamliel. So you've got post the destruction of the temple, almost at the Bar Kokhba revolt, we're going to still have this debate over Shammai and Hillel. You get this one brief moment, it seems, during that period when they went to Hananya ben Chizkiah's house to visit him, when they have this kind of imposition of Shammai martial law for a brief period of time, but that goes away. So what was going on actually historically? It seems to me, I would say more broadly, that the more educated and sophisticated people among them understood that this was a machlokas l'shem shamayim. That what you had here was a sophisticated argument and two perspectives on the way halakha should and could be learned. On the other hand, you had those, you know, everyone roots for their team. And when you root for your team, what do? Sometimes you root for them blindly, and it can create this kind of tension. And I think there was an honest attempt by particularly Beis Shammai to try to bring, you know, balance to the force, if it were, as it were. You know, to try to create some sort of uniformity in service. And it happened for a little while, but not without, you know, great pain and suffering, and not without the blood that went along with it. And so what you're going to get, and I mean, I guess you can see this as maybe one of the steps to what led to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, if you wanted to see it like that. Even though, interestingly enough, when Chazal talk about the Sinas Chinam, the, you know, internal strife that led to the destruction of the temple, they never mention Shammai and Hillel. The Tzdukim and the Purushim, you know, but within the Pharisees, they never mentioned these type of things. You know, were the, you know, Sikarai and the Zealots, were they, you know, followers of Shammai? Hard to say whether they were. I wouldn't be surprised if some of them were. But what you have here is, again, is there's this undercurrent of a lot of confusion in the wake of discovering this new modality of how halacha is going to be decided. There's a lot of confusion and a lot of tension that seems to be going on during these times. Okay. Questions? Come. All right. Go ahead.